So how y'all? We fine. I'm so glad to be here. You know, I haven't spoke to a NAFA group in Salt Lake, and I don't know, what is it, 1932 or something like that? You know, it's been a long time, hasn't it? But I got to tell you, I'm so proud. I have a new book out. There it is. It's October 16th. I'm going to give a lot of you a free copy of this, by the way. My ninth book. I'm really thrilled about this. This book has done really well, called Why Smart People Make Dumb Mistakes with the Money. How many of you have read anything I've ever written before? Just out of curiosity. Would you raise your hand, please? Yep, we got a whopping 5 people. Thanks, Ben. I appreciate that, buddy. How many, frankly, have no idea who I am, but you're kind of waiting expectantly for lunch? Let's come out this. Hey, how to reach your clients, how to understand what they're thinking, how to get inside their heads. Y'all realize when you're on the telephone, you're only gleaning about 35% of the overall meaning in a conversation. You buy that? That means unless you're eyeball to eyeball with these prospects or clients, belly button to belly button, toenail to toenail, you're missing about 65% of the meat of that message. And even a sharp college boy like me, who was senior class president 2 years in a row, I'm sorry. If you don't graduate quick enough, they hold you back. You had to stay there. It's like a 10-year program, you know. What's your name?
Jake.
We're going to work on this program together, you, me, Jake, okay? Hey, here are 3 benefits you're going to get from this very short program. Number one, how to literally and absolutely reach these prospect clients' minds anytime you want to from today on. Number 2, how to use some of the really current research from subliminal seduction in advertising. And how to use it to magnetize these prospects instead of chasing them so hard. And number 3, more importantly, how to say the right thing to the right prospect client at the right time. Are you interested so far?
Yes.
Before I did that, I've done a lot of research on y'all. Hold that for a second, Jake, would you please? And it kind of hit me circling Salt Lake City Airport for 5 years last night. It's a psychological technique that will determine whether or not you're actually going to make it in this business. Some of you may be delivering mail for the Postal Service, and I'd like to find out who the big producers are. It's kind of a psychosocial test. When I say go, I want you to put your arms up just like this and then cross your fingers. Ready? On your mark. Get set. See, this guy doesn't want to do it. What are you, a Democrat? Get those hands up. Come on. No Democrats in Utah. What's wrong with you? Ready? On your mark. Get set, go. Now, look down and see which thumb is on top. Would you please, which thumb? Right thumb, left thumb, which one is it? If you have your left thumb on top, I want you to look at that sucker just like this. Would you please? My good friend, Harvard psychology professor, Dr. Fingertip Harcourt says, if your left thumb is on top, he says, this means you're sexy. I just saw that. Stand up. Stand up. I just saw that. That was so funny. What's your name? Craig? Put your hands back together, Craig. I don't know if you saw this, but I just saw Craig here switch thumbs. Did you happen to? No, that was good. Andy, both thumb people here? Both thumbs together? Yeah, far goes, yeah, both thumbs together. This means you're a great thinker. And how many of you have your right thumb on top? Would you look at that? There you go. Far quartz is if your right thumb is on top, this means you think you're sexy. Just show that to everybody. Hey, quick question coming up. Would you like your prospects or clients from today on to retain 300% more of what you say to them in 1/2 the time? Would that help you? Better yet, would you like to increase your closing ratio? I don't know, from a current, what do you think it is? Maybe 45, 50% generally? How about 85% in 3 minutes? Would that help you? Well, I need a victim for this. And, well, Jake, you look pretty victimized already. Come up here, would you please, buddy? What a sharp-looking kid this is, huh? Holy cow. Thank you, Jake. Would you do the clicker for me? Because this is that's forward, that's backward, and we'll all know your name if you screw it up, okay? Okay, stand up here, Jake. Good to see you, Jake. What a sharp... Face that way. Let this group look at you. What a sharp-looking guy. And why do you want to know that? These Utah people, huh, you know? A couple of years ago, Jake, 2 researchers, University of Minnesota, Minneapolis, did a little project, Jake, in which they took a quarter like this, put that quarter into a telephone booth on a ledge next to a phone, walked out of the phone booth, and then hid behind a tree. Now, raise your hand if you would not pick up a quarter lying by itself in an empty phone booth. Would not. Raise your hand, please. Times are real tough in Utah with you people this year, huh? But you know a guy like Jake would, though. Does it look like a culprit up here so far, the kind of guy to take a quarter out of a phone booth? Does it look like that to you? Yeah, look at him. He'd take the whole phone booth. Oh, I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. Back in the old days, we used to have this big glass boxes, and you put things in it, and you pick up this thing and talk in it. It was just amazing. You know, you never saw it, but it was just crazy back in those days. Culprit would walk in the phone booth, walk out with a quarter. Researcher would walk up to the culprit and say, "Did you happen to see my quarter in there? I need to make it out of the phone call. Did you see my quarter in that phone booth?"
"For sure."
"You're not really in this business, are you, Jake?" You know, only 23% of the cases did the culprit give the quarter back to the researcher. This is nuts, huh? 23%. On the other hand, these researchers, real sharp guys, did them a little bit different, replaced the quarter in the phone booth, looked out there, walked out, hid behind another tree, but this time, touched that culprit below the elbow for not longer than 3 seconds. And said almost the same thing. "Sure, did you happen to see my quarter in there? I need to make another phone call. Did you see my quarter in that phone booth?" "Say yes, Jake." No, they didn't grab him like I did, but they did touch her very lightly on the arm. In the majority of the cases, these culprits would literally reach in their pockets and say, "Son of a gun, is this your quarter? I was just looking for someone to give it back to." Now, tough question coming up. Raise your hand if, in the last 24 hours, did you, without thinking about it, completely unconsciously, just happen to touch somebody on the side of the arm to grab their attention, reinforce a comment, or get them to remember something that was critical for them to comprehend and understand? How many of you did that without thinking? Would you raise your hand, please? Yep. This works extremely well for you single people, doesn't it? Do you have any idea how effectively you could close business with this technique, number one? But number two, how long the retain key product benefits if you link that benefit with touching them at the time you talk about it? You want proof? Here it comes. Do me a favor right now, would you please? Grab the person next to you right now. Grab that person. Sir, only on the arm, buddy. Just on. No, you can't do that. What's serious? Really?
Really?
Oh, okay. Now, do me a favor. Look at that person you just grabbed, eyeball to eyeball. Don't touch. Just look. Don't touch. Without touching, I want you to say something nice to that person, but don't touch. On your mark, get set, go. By the way, give Jake a hand for the grief I gave him, would you please? Thank you, Jake. Click that. Good. That's good. Was that a nice compliment? Was that nice? Okay, now here's the hard part. This time I want you to say that nice thing you just got through saying one more time. But this time I want you to touch that person, hey buddy, below the elbow this time, for not longer than 3 seconds. And say that nice thing simultaneously with the touch. On your mark, get set, go. By the way, did it work? Did it work? Any of you pick up any business? You know, you got me there, Carrie. I'm not going to do this. This is kind of stupid, isn't it? You expect me to walk up to people, grab them on the arm. Come on, they're going to feel offended, defensive, ticked off. I'm not going to do this kind of stuff. I know what you're talking about. I just got through speaking in Dallas, Texas, about a year and a half ago, to 2,500 radio broadcasters. President of this group walked up to me, looked at me for a long time. He said, "Son, you little touch the thing you talked about may work in California where you're from." He said, "Boy, we don't touch in Texas," which is a pretty good point. How come below the elbow? Does it make a difference? Can you offend people if you do it? Hang on. Listen to the research. University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. Here's what they found out. What's your name?
Caleb.
Good to meet you, buddy.
Good to meet you.
You look like a smart kid.
Thank you.
Yeah. Did you ever go to school?
I did go to school.
You look smart. Remember back in the old days, Caleb, librarians used to like, hey, check books out, right, buddy? But they'd threaten you, Caleb. They'd stamp the date and say, bring it back in 2 weeks, I'm going to break your legs. You're taking her book out of her library, right, Caleb?
Yep.
That was one case. Second case, psychologists actually trained the librarian to touch a student on the arm as a student reached for the book. Ready for this, Caleb?
Yeah.
IQ test, buddy. Reach up and grab that book, would you please? Yeah. Bring it back in 2 weeks, et cetera, et cetera. Caleb? Caleb,
I'll bring it back.
It's time to let go of the book, Caleb. As you might have guessed, those students who were touched said the librarian was more sincere, persuasive, honest. Hey, listen to this part. Caring than the students who had not been touched. But here's the kicker. Only 5% of the students who were touched ever realized they'd been contacted. 5%. Will this offend your prospects? I don't think so. Will you lose business if you do this? No, I think the opposite will happen. How do I know this? Tom O'Brien. Wrote me letters to carry. I just made $35,000 in commissions in one day using this technique. I couldn't believe it. I called him back on the phone. I said, Tom, you made 35 grand in one day. He said, well, took me 9 months to get that one day, but it was one day. Have you dealt with people before who've taken weeks or months of your time in giving you zip business? Has it happened yet or not? Because you know it's going to. I can't explain this, Carrie. I don't know how this works. I do know, though, I took this business owner out to Lushoni's restaurant next to his office. He said, I reached across the table, got my elbow and some salad dressing, touched the guy in the arm, and I said, I recommend we do this right now. Within 10 seconds, business owner took out a pen and said, is there like a contract I sign? How long will the underwriting take? Do you think we're going to get me approved? Come on, let's get honest about this business. University of Connecticut has now shown that 89% of your clients care more about their relationship with you than they do about the premium. Do you believe me on this one? According to Forrester Research, clients want three things from you. Number one, they want to understand functionally what they're buying. Most don't. Number two, they want to know that you're their advisor for the rest of their life and you aren't. And number three, they want to know that you're going to be there for them, frequency of their relationship, contacting them every couple of months, and you don't. Give me a show of hands. How many of you sincerely, honestly believe that what you know about people in this business is more important than what the Fed is thinking about doing or DOL passed us? How many think your people skills are the most important skills you've got? Am I right or wrong about this? I get to you. How many of you were at the MDRT in Vancouver a couple of years ago? Anybody here? You were there, John?
Yes, sir.
You know, John's a good LDS boy, so I know he didn't go to this restaurant to think about it. Anybody else go to the Vancouver meeting? Okay, well, you were there. Do you remember Cardrina's restaurant right next to the waterfront? It was such a great hangout. This woman was, a guy walked up to me the day afterwards. He says, I just went to Cardrina's restaurant. I just used the thing you talked about. It works so well. Tell me about the story. He said, there was one walk around to trailer tequila shooter just kind of aimlessly walking like this. He said, you having some problems? Yeah, nobody likes tequila tonight. I think it's just a bad economy right now. He said, listen, I just heard the speaker. Just walk up to anybody, touch them on the arm. She said, it's not going to work. People are not buying tonight. Okay, I'll try it. She walked up to the first person. She said, would you like to buy tequila for yourself or tray for the whole table? She had the whole tray sold in 10 minutes, walked out this beautiful bayfront window, just kind of stared. The guy that heard me speak walked up to her and said, did it work? Yeah, really well. Why don't you get her the tray? I don't want to do any more. It worked too well. I think it's unethical. We're now teaching waiters and waitresses in restaurants this technique all across Utah in an effort to get you more dessert and give them higher tips. Would you like to hear about this? We're now teaching these people to walk up to you while you're eating and say things like, I've really enjoyed serving you. Please come back soon. Next time, bring more money. Was that fun for you too, by the way?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Hit that, Ken. One more time. You know, there are four stages in a prospect-client relationship, four steps you got to go through. You miss one step, you miss a sale, you miss all four steps, you miss a career. Number one is approach. You know, cold calls work. They do. 4% of the time, you get somebody that's going to talk to you. Direct mail works. One half of 1/10% of the time you get a response. Wrong prospects are not qualified. Social media, who knows? Spend a lot of money. Who knows what the responses are going to be? But referrals are it. You know, what's really interesting about referrals is that 25% more likely to buy, you're going to make 35% more money. And here's the problem. You wait for people to actually introduce people to you. And those are called advocates. And you do have them. According to Financial Planning Magazine, 77% of your clients you think are advocates. They talk about you when you're not there. They're not. 15% will talk about you. And the problem is, most of us just aren't getting referrals effectively. It's just, this is so tough when you're not getting referrals. Here's a three-part technique to get them on a daily basis. Push that, Ken, please. It's called catch-up, update, referral. Let me tell you what doesn't work. What doesn't work is being to say, I get paid in two ways, by the business we do, the referrals I get. Oh, I love that one, don't you? Oh, how about this one? Listen, don't keep me a secret. Or how about this one? If you know anybody, let me know. Come on, are you serious? They didn't work 30 years ago. They don't work now. This does. Number one, catch up, update, referral. Use these sentences. I want you to call your clients every 3 months. A's and B's, not C's, by the way. Compliance is everybody, but A's and B's every 3 months. And I want you to catch up on the family. How's little Johnny? How was that vacation you took to Lake Powell? Was that fun? That is so cool. Number two, I want you to update them on what the market has done, what the market may do, what the economy has done, what the economy may do. You know, your clients are terrified. If you're doing any AUM at all, they're listening to CNBC, scare them, Fox Business, sensationalize them. Bloomberg doesn't care. They just want to tick everybody off. Your clients are scared. They need to talk to you. And number three, I want you to use three sentences to get referrals every time you talk. Let me tell you what they are first, then I'll tell you exactly the sentences. Number one, let your clients know how much you appreciate the relationship. Number two, this is critical, let your clients know that they need to help their friends. And I got to tell you, your clients don't care about you. I'm sorry, they don't. My clients don't care about me, but they do care about the family and friends. They do. And number three, be direct on asking for that referral. Here it comes. Ready? Sentence number one. You know, I really enjoy working with you. I really do. Sentence number two. Not sure you know this, but 83% of your friends and family will run out of money during retirement. It's very scary, and they may not even tell you that. Sentence number three. Not if you know anybody, don't keep me. No. Who do you know who could benefit from the kind of relationship we've had so far? One more time. Love working with you. 83% of your friends and family will run out of money during retirement. Who do you know who could benefit from the kind of relationship we've had so far? You know, one of my coaching clients, we have a coaching company. We promise our clients they'll increase their business by 80% within 8 weeks. This guy's name is Matt Larman. He is so funny. I'm not going to make phone calls. I'm not going to call people every 3 months. They don't want to hear from me every 3 months. I said, Matt, they do. They do. I'll do it once. Okay. The next Monday, he called me back. Carrie, you can't believe what just happened. I called a guy named Rick. I said, hey, Rick, this is Matt. I just want to tell you what the market's doing. I want to give you a couple of tips on what's happening right now. Don't get scared. We got you protected. If there's anything you need to talk about, give me a phone call back. But don't worry, because I will call you back in 3 months if I don't hear from you in the next couple of days. My phone number is 516, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Click. 5 minutes later, lady calls. Hi, are you sure your name, Matt? Yeah, it is. Were you trying to call a guy named Rick? Yeah, I was. Well, there's no Rick here. You got a wrong number. I'm so sorry. Do you really call your clients every 3 months? Yes, I do. I haven't heard from my Merrill Lynch person in 3 years. Do you handle accounts more than $1 million? Yes, I do. Matt said, I'm going to start dialing wrong numbers from now on. But if you're really smart, you're never going to ask for referrals ever again, because you're going to listen for referrals. People always name drop, don't they? I've got this neighbor over here who did this. My uncle does this over here. My brother does this. My nephew does this. And this guy does this. Gang, I get 5 referrals every single week, and I haven't asked referral, I don't know, for maybe 35 years. Just listen to how people use the names. Let me tell you something, though. I'm just going to show the picture. I play pro tennis from 1976 until 1977. I was ranked 95 in the world until they fixed the ATP computer ranking system where I slipped to 10,033. Okay, I'm not proud of the shorts, okay? It's not a good look for me. We all looked like drug dealers back in those days, too. It's just the way people looked. I mean, it's just the way, you know? But my claim to fame was you're going way too fast. Are you just kind of clicking through this stuff? I'm going to replace you. You're there. Okay. You're a millennial. You probably know how to work this thing, don't you? There it is. See, nobody even saw that one. Okay. Well, that was a long time ago, too, but okay. So just a little touch, light touch. You can do that, can't you? Okay. My claim to fame, 1977. I drew Jimmy Connors in the first round match. Dallas, Texas, Reunion Hall. First round match, WCT. He had 110 scored strategy with me. It was called Clean My Clock. He beat me 6-0, 6-1. And I'm exaggerating that by one game. It's not funny. Jimmy Connors, back in those days, had the best return to serve in Pro Tennis. He was the only guy on the tour who could return Roscoe Tanner's 138-mile-per-hour serve and hit winners off the serve. By the way, nobody could do that. And this kid, Sam Groth, right now, this African, serves 165? Really? You can't see the ball. It's like a lightning bolt. You had to go, what? What out? What happened? I said, Jimmy, what do you do, buddy? Do you slice your backhands? Do you topspin those forehands? Do you block it back, tip it back? Give me a tip. What do you do? He looked at me and said, you know, I just made $45,000 off of you in 22 minutes. He said, I guess you deserve an answer. He said, I return serve better than anybody on earth because I listen to the way the ball sounds as it comes off the server's racket. I could hear a topspin. I could hear a slice. I could hear a twist. I could hear what the ball is going to do. I anticipate game, set, match, Connors. Gifted tennis player. Also one of the biggest brats in tennis. See, I thought that too until I took my then 5-year-old daughter, Stacy, to an exhibition match between Jimmy Connors and John McEnroe. What a mistake that was, huh? This 5-year-old saw John McEnroe throw a racket at the umpire during the middle of the match. She looked at me, she said, Dad, I want to become a professional tennis player. She said, I'm tired of throwing temper tantrums for free. But if you're really smart, you're never going to ask referrals ever again, and your business will double this year, and this is just one tiny thing that you can do. You know, I love LinkedIn. I don't like Facebook. I don't like Twitter. I don't like any of this because LinkedIn is the one that has social engagement. You can engage with people 66% of the time on LinkedIn. You can't do with anything else, and here's the way to monetize LinkedIn. Before I start this, though, give me a show of hands. How many of you received at least 3 referrals in the last 7 days solely from LinkedIn? Give me a show of hands. Holy cow. Maybe we need to understand and know this, right? Here it comes. This is my profile. Nothing big. Pay by the numbers. Put your bio here. Put your books here. Put your picture here. Nothing big about that. But listen to this. One of the people I'm connected to is a guy named Earl Zoot. The cool thing with LinkedIn is I could see all the people he's connected to also. Here are the 3 people that I just put up here. Now, the really great thing about LinkedIn, I can filter the people I want to talk to. I can look at where they're located. I can look at their job classification. I can see gray hair. I can see their fluency level. And during that 3-month phone call, Caleb, I called him and said, hey, love to meet Jeff. How much you know about Jeff? Good guy. We play golf together. Would you introduce me? Love to. How about Ron? Don't know him. I'm sorry. A third, they don't know at all. You know, this is so much fun. You should leave her because my first grandbaby is going to be born in a couple weeks. I love that sound. Can you just kind of leave her there for me?
Sure.
Oh, she's going to keep crying?
Sure.
Okay. What's his name?
Spencer.
Can I hold him?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Hey, buddy. This is like a drug fix for me. 2 weeks. Nick is excited. I'm so excited.
Yeah, it is exciting.
Spencer. Okay. What are we doing here? Hey, Eric, do you know Eric? Yeah, I know him well. Can you introduce me? Love to. Let me tell you something. All you have to do in the 3-month phone calls is look at who they're connected to and find out who you want to talk to and ask for 3 names on every phone call, and you'll get 2 or 3. Referrals are easy. But let me tell you something. I'm embarrassed to say this, but you'll forget 70% of what I say by tomorrow. You'll forget 90% within 3 days unless you implement this stuff in the next 24 hours. Yeah, it's true. But you know, the best implementer I've ever seen in my whole life was Mike Ditka. The Bears! 1985. Boy, he had the dream team, though, didn't he? Yeah, so you see, he had Singletary as the defensive captain. He had Jim McMahon as a quarterback. And he had Walter Payton was on that team that year, Ken, was it? Yeah? Oh, man, that was so cool. But he had the Fridge. What was Fridge's first name? Do you know, Mark? William Perry, that's it. What you didn't know about Ditka, though, was he was injured when he played football. He walked with a limp. And he was very abusive to his team. Limp, scream, limp, scream. All of a sudden, one day, the team was in a circle. He said to the team, he said to Perry, "Hey, Fridge, when I'm done, why don't you do the Lord's Prayer?" "Okay, coach. Okay, I'll do it." Jim McMahon looked at Singletary. Look at him. This guy's terrified. I don't think he knows it. Singletary said, "Everybody knows the Lord's Prayer." McMahon said, "I'll bet you $25 he doesn't know it." Limp, berate, limp, berate. All of a sudden, he said, "Fridge, you're up. Let's go. Lord's Prayer." "Okay. Close your eyes. Bow your heads. I prayed the Lord my soul. I pray the Lord my God go to sleep." You know, he did. You know, "I pray the Lord my soul to keep." He did. It was so funny. The whole team erupted with laughter. All of a sudden, McMahon gave Singletary $25 and said, "Here you go." "I didn't know he knew it." Go back one, would you please? All the things I've been talking about so far, touching below the elbow, all the other things we're talking about, are really, really manipulative. Don't get me wrong here. They're not manipulative in your business. They only become manipulative when your spouse is learning how to use these kind of techniques on you. That's when they become manipulative. You too. Stand up, would you please? You're such a great-looking couple. Holy cow. Can you face this way, please? What's your name?
Boyd.
Nice to meet you. And what's your name?
Roxanne.
Roxanne. I like that. I'm going to ask you one quick question here, okay? You have to answer this question simultaneously. Ready for me, Boyd, here? You're tracking with me?
From all these people?
Yeah. You all right, Faye? Okay, here it comes. How long have you been married?
31 years.
You have no idea, Boyd, do you? No idea. Go ahead, sit down. Sit down. Boyd, I don't mean to embarrass you, buddy, but I just got married. Hit that. There you go, to that lady. Isn't she gorgeous?
Yeah,
her name is Marita. She's an American Airlines flight attendant. Isn't she cute?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I got that picture out of a magazine. The only reason I mention this is, hit that one more time. 2 weeks after I married this woman, she walked up to me, grabbed me below the elbow. She said, "Carrie, I guarantee you'll have better results with me tonight if you take me out to dinner." Look what happened, left-hand corner. See that right there? Hit that again. These are my girls. The one in the right side, her name is Stacy. She's my first grandbaby. She took the baby? Oh, there you are, Marcella. My first grandbaby in 2 weeks. I'm so excited. The one on the left-hand side is my daughter, Catherine. She's trying to get into nursing school in the fall. And the middle one. The middle one. She's special. This kid spent 4 years ago with YWAM going to Indonesia, Hong Kong, Thailand, rescuing girls out of sex slavery for a whole year. This kid is special. Yeah. And then 3 years ago, I won a tennis tournament. August 13th, 2014, we had separate cars. She left 15 minutes before me. I left at 9:30. I went up the 55 freeway. I passed an ambulance. My daughter was hit by a drunk driver. The girl that hit her was blowing 0.25 alcohol level, going 120 miles per hour. Hit her once in the left-hand fender, hit her a second time in the upper left-hand fender. The second time, though, was devastating. Knocked off the freeway down an 85-foot embankment and hit a tree. Hit that witch, please. That's the car. But But you know, there's great news. This is what you look like 3 days after the accident. You know, a lot of people say, thank God for airbags. No, this is a thank God for God thing. It kind of hit me. You know, she took a year to recuperate, a year to get her concussion together. She dropped out of school, dropped out of work for a while. But it kind of hit me. By the time our kids hit this age, 24 years old, we will have spent $285,000 raising each kid, which is totally unfair because I had children so I could pre-board airplanes. I wasn't expecting this kind of stuff to happen, yeah? Speaking of airlines, how many of you have flown the worst airline in America? Where do you think it is? Just yell it out. The worst airline, where do you think it is? Don't say Delta. Delta's not the worst. Who sits? Who said Spirit? Anybody say Spirit here? Did you? No, you said Spirit. What's your name?
Paul.
Spirit is not, well, actually, they are. They're the worst airline. I was going to say they're not, but the U.S. government officially voted Spirit is the worst airline in America just a year and a half ago, which is totally unfair, Paul, because I went to go snow skiing last Christmas. I went from, by the way, just a little plug for Utah. I've skied around the world. I've skied Argentina, Chile, New Zealand, Switzerland. My favorite place in the world to ski is Snowbird in Alta. Favorite place in the whole world. Honest to goodness. Yeah. But I went to Breckenridge. I got on the airplane in Los Angeles to go to Denver to go to Breckenridge. Spirit had mistletoe in the doorway of the airplane, Paul. Isn't that cool? That's so clever. I looked at the flight attendant and said, what's that mistletoe for? She said, on Spirit, that means you could kiss your bags goodbye. Click that one more time, would you please? There you go. Number two is called probing. Asking questions needs analysis, fact-finding. If you haven't heard this before, you might want to write this one down. Prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. You know the average doctor in America makes $168,000 a year? Do you know that? Do you also know the average radiologist makes $279? Did you know the average GP in America only makes $138? Shocking, huh? Aren't you glad you didn't become a doctor? What do you think the highest paid medical specialist is in America? What do you think? Just yell it out. Plastic surgeons, they do well. Malibu, they're about 800,000, maybe 1.2. Ice, hang on for a second. Who? What? Cardiologists, they bet 8 bills, 9 bills, not bad. Yeah, actually, Van Mueller had it right. Eye surgeons. How many of you had your eyes LASIK before? Would you raise your hand, please? LASIK? Did you? What's your name? Lynn. Stand up, Lynn, for a second, would you please? You had LASIK? Did you get a receipt on that LASIK? I mean, oh, I have readers too. Yeah, I know that. How are your eyes right now? 2010, 2015? 2020. 2020? Wow, no kidding. Okay, let's test. How many fingers? Your doc last year, Lynn, made $5 million. $5,000 every 15 minutes? Oh, yeah, $5 million. My doc, Tom Tuma, when I had mine done 15 years ago, he actually told me over a beer that he's the highest paid physician in California at $38 million. Thanks, Lynn. And they don't make that much money because of educational background. They might make that much because they're often willing to test you virtually to death because the better you die from testing than them die financially from malpractice suits. Now, that's what I call probing, huh? And have you ever sold to a doctor in here before? Ever sell something to a doctor? What are you, a masochist? You know the difference between God and a doctor? God doesn't think he's a doctor. Why would you do that to yourself? What's wrong with you? But you know, here's what you're thinking, though. You're thinking, Carrie, I know how to probe. I know what I'm doing. We got this great FNA thing with this fact sheet. Some of you do Riskalyze, this risk analyzer thing. You're very smart. It's very impressive, I know. I like it. Except, when you probe for numbers. When people buy, they buy relationships. And when you probe, I think you're not probing enough for the things they really want from you. But I could be wrong. What the heck do I know? Here's a quick question for you. How many of you think that people could change? They can change. They do change. They will change. How many think that people, that's true? People can and do change. Let's go. Come on. Declare yourself here. How many think that people don't change, won't change? Even if they could, they wouldn't want to change. How many think that's true? You know, I'm not getting a full show of hands here. How many of you don't know what's going on yet this morning? Would you raise your hand? Big news, gang. Except for the grace of God, who could change anybody's heart, people don't change. Managers, you better know this. You can build skills, you can learn things, but you can't change the core character, everything else. Why is this? You know, what's the proof on this? Recidivism rate, going back to prison after getting out of prison, is 83% within 3 years. Now, how many are here ex-cons? Would you raise your hand, please? Just, yeah, it's you, isn't it, Mark? It's you. They're going to move the prison, though, by the way, so do you. You know, it's good reading time, though. Good, not great food, but at least I got some private time. Any newlyweds in here? Newlyweds, less than 3 years of marriage? Newlyweds? Okay, here. What's your name right there, the first guy?
Dallin.
What's your name?
Dallin.
Got some cool names. Caleb, Dallin, I love these names. How many years of marriage for you, Dallin?
One and a half.
Ooh, baby, that's so great. Good marriage so far, Dallin?
Awesome.
Yeah. Did y'all catch that so far part, by the way? Dallin, you ready for this? Divorce rate in America is 62% for the first 10 years in marriage. 62%. You got a prenup, buddy? Don't answer that, Dallin. Don't answer that. Second marriages. Is it higher or lower than 62%? What do you think? How many said higher? How many said lower? Smart people. 78% divorce rate for second marriages within 10 years. 78%. You know why it's so high? Because you took yourself with you to the second marriage. Now, if you believe that people don't change, and I could go on for hours about this one, does it also make sense that people don't change their buying habits either? So if you just find out how they bought before, you think they just might replicate the same behavior in the future? Well, what the heck? Let's try it. Hit that. This is called instant replay. I want you to ask how they picked their last agent, advisor, broker, doesn't matter what you call them. How did you pick them? See, Anthony, what they want to tell you is, how did they meet him? Well, my wife knew his wife. Our kids played together. I don't care how they met. I care why they picked him. There's only five reasons why people pick an advisor when they're seniors looking into retirement. Number one, I want to avoid running out of money. Number two, I want to mitigate taxes. Number three, volatility scares me. Number four, inflation terrifies me. And number five is legacy for my kids. They're going to say something like that. So when they give you an answer, all you have to do is say, that's how they picked the last one. That's how they're going to pick me in the future. But this next one's even better. Give me a show of hands. How many of you have ever had anybody say, let me go think about it? Would you raise your hand, please? Let me go think about it. And what's your name right here, sir? Kevin? Kevin? Of course, when they said that, they came back the next day pretty much every single time and said, I love it. I thought all night about this. You're my guy. That's what happened, right?
100%
Yeah, I know. Me either. You want to stop that forever? Here it comes. Use this sentence. Sentences. At the very end of the probing appointment, I want you to say, if we come up with a plan, retirement plan, financial plan, doesn't matter, that works for you, I hope you say great, let's do it. If we come up with a plan you don't like, I want you just to say no. Here's the money sentence. What I'd rather you not do is say, I don't know, give me some time, I'll get back to you. Listen carefully, because that tells me you don't have all the information you need to make an informed decision, and you're not going to hurt my feelings by saying no. Is that okay with you? And say, is that okay with you? And get a yes or a no. One more time. If we come up with a plan that works for you, I hope you say, great, let's do it. If we come up with a plan you don't like, I hope you just say no. But what I'd rather you not do is say, give me a few weeks, couple months, I'll get back to you, because that tells me you don't have all the information you need to make an informed decision, and you're not going to hurt my feelings by saying no. Is that okay with you? You're going to kill stalls 85%. We got better things to do after they stall you a second time, but this is pretty darn cool. But this next one's my favorite. Hit that again, that little slide there. This is called the less assumed technique. You have these fact finders and you find all this information, but until you ask this question, you don't really know what people want to buy from you. Here it is, ready? Let's assume it's 3 years in the future. What happened during those 3 years, Corey, that let you know we had a perfect financial retirement life plan, that was perfect plan, and you and I both had a really great relationship. Let's assume it's 3 years. What happened during those 3 years? We had a perfect plan. You and I have both great. Whatever they say is what they want to buy from you. And if you don't sell that, you're selling something else. that they don't really care that much about. Make sense? There's one exception in the no change rule, by the way, one exception, smoking. I think that's a big change in life. Personally, I think it's really difficult to do. How many of you ever did that? Stop smoking, cold turkey one day, never smoked again? Of course, nobody smokes in Utah, but I'm just going to ask this question rhetorically. Ever smoked one day and then never smoked again? Anybody here? Yeah, one person. Who's the hand? Where's the hand? Oh, there you are. What's your name?
David.
David. Was that hard for you, David?
Yes.
One day that was it? Hard? There are easier ways, David. One's called Smokers Anonymous. Have you heard about this? It's a lot like Alcoholics Anonymous, except when you get the urge to smoke, you call up Smokers Anonymous. They send somebody over, you both get drunk. It's a very effective technique. Of course, nobody drinks in Utah, though, so it doesn't really matter that much. One more time. Number three is present solutions. They just told you they want to buy, nothing else. And number four, hit that again. You got to know when to stop talking, right, Greg? You got to know when to stop talking. Now, I didn't do all this stuff for remedial sales training. I did this for one reason. I want you all to tell me right now, which two of these are women best at? Which two? What do you think? Come on, yell it out. What do you think? Which two? Yeah? Roxanne just whispered, everything we do, we're better than men at. You happen to hear that part? Well, how many said approach? Would you raise your hand? Yeah, you know women approach better. They make appointments quicker. They see people faster. You know they're better at that stuff. And number two, what are they better at? They probe because they listen better. They pull emotions out quicker. They elicit warmth and response better than men do. Now, listen, managers, you got to know this part. Males are better at presenting and closing because males care less about relationships breaking apart in case people say no. Now, if you were saying to me 10 years ago, hey, Buckaroo, I know 125 different ways to close, I would have said, you're the biggest hitter in the room. Today, the better you probe, the less you have to close. The better you probe, the longer they stay closed. The better you probe, the more their friends they close for you. And the better you probe, the faster they close themselves. Probing is the most important part of the process. Because of this one reason, it's my personal opinion, because women are better at it, that I really believe that women are better with people. They understand people. Their closing ratio could be higher. They listen better. I think women are better at this business than men could ever be. End of story. Roxanne is thinking, I love this guy. Hang on, Roxanne. Hang on. This business is harder for you than men. Harder. Two reasons. Number one, some men don't have the level of respect for you they would for a man. And number two, especially in huge cases. And number two is worse. Some men, Roxanne, are actually intimidated by your knowledge in this business until today. I'm going to give you statistics that can knock your socks off. Ready for this? I would write this down if I were you. 83% of consumer goods in America are purchased by women. 83%. 57% of all retail financial products in America are purchased by women. 62% of all cars in America are purchased by women. And how many of you men have this sneaking suspicion, don't know why this is, that women spend more money than men do? Give me a show of hands. Let's go. Come on, come on, come on. Harvard did an analytical study here, and here's how and why what they found out. Hit that again, would you please? Harvard's research. Go back one. Go forward one. Did I mess that thing up? Go, give that to me. Here's what Harvard found out. And you know the amazing thing is, most of you men have absolutely no idea even how to communicate with women, let alone sell to them. Am I right or wrong about this woman? Give me back up here. Is that true or not? But it's not their fault, though. I mean, look at this good-looking guy. What's your name?
Darren.
Is it Darren? Look at Darren. He looks smart, doesn't he? He looks like, you know, you've been to college. I mean, you look like you're experienced. But Darren, your dad never taught you this stuff, did he?
That's right.
Yeah. Here's what happens. Every young boy in America goes through something called terminal puberty. This is where he sleeps till 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, thinks about girls 24/7, eats all the food in your house. How many of you have a teenage son right there right now? Teenage son. Oh, same guy. Okay, how old's your teenage son?
18.
Yeah, that's your, do you have any other teenagers? Just 18. What's his name?
Spencer.
Spencer. Yeah. There you go. Spencer's having a tough time with girls, isn't he? No, he is.
Okay, he is.
He is. Yeah. Good answer. You know how I know this? Because when my daughter Caroline was 18, she was terrorizing your son Spencer. I called Caroline from Dallas and I said, "Did you get your calculus homework done?" She said, "Dad, I'm going out with a new boy." "You're what? What's this going out? Stuff it." I said, "Dad, it's not a big deal. We hold hands between classes. He buys me Coke at lunchtime. It's called going out. Leave me alone. You're embarrassing me. Don't talk to me." "Well, what's the process of going out, sweetheart?" "Real simple. I give a note to Valerie. She gives a note to Rebecca. Rebecca gives a note to Kathy. Susan, the boy. How do you break up?" "Same thing reversed. Rebecca, Susan, Kathy." I said, "Sweetheart, do you ever go out with a new boy? Before you get the note back from the old boy, it's okay to break up. Happens all the time, Dad. Don't these boys get upset?" "No, Dad, these boys are real stupid." At some point, Darren, your son Spencer is going to look at you and say, "Dad, I'm having a hard time. She wants to kiss me. She doesn't want to talk to me. She likes me. She doesn't like me. How come they do that, Dad?" At that point, you and every father in America will look at your son and say, "Son, we don't know." "Ask your mother. I don't know." Would you believe, gentlemen, Deborah Tannen's research, Johns Hopkins University, has now determined that most of you men think of your wives as your best friends. Is that right, Boyd? Would you also believe, gentlemen, your wives do not think the same of you? You want some some proof on this? You want to see what happens? Okay, here it comes. If you're male and married, raise your hand right now, please. Male and married. Okay, we got, boy, everybody's married in this room. I can't believe how many people are married. Holy cow, who's not married here? Well, that guy over there is not married. Corey, right? Corey's not married. Okay. Now, raise your hand again, gentlemen, if you think of your wife as your best friend. Come on, real high. Holy cow, look. More hands went up the second time than the first time. I'm not sure what that means. Okay, women only. If you're female and married, raise your hand right now, please. Female and married. There's absolutely no purpose to the question except that Corey wondered who the single women were. I'm helping you here. Take some notes. Okay, one more time, women. One more time. If you think of your husband as your best friend, raise it one more time. Raise it again, women. Best friend. Okay, holy cow. Now, put it back up, Roxanne. Put it back up. No, it wasn't there. It was right. Whenever you see a woman with her hand halfway up, that means she's sitting next to her husband. Yeah, he protests too much, doesn't he? Yeah.
32 years.
Yeah, you want to think? You want how to sell? Do this. I want you to, women communicate intimacy and rapport, gentlemen. Women, this is for you. Males communicate status and power. When a woman communicates, gentlemen, she communicates to get a connection. She communicates to let you know what she's thinking about, what she's going through. When a woman talks to you, men, she wants empathy, sometimes sympathy, but she wants you to be there for her no matter when she chooses to talk, no matter what she chooses to talk about. Am I right or wrong about this woman? Give me some backup, yes or no? Come on.
Yes.
This is why women go to bathrooms in platoons. What's your name?
Kim.
Kim, stand up, Kim, would you please? Kim. Kim, I've actually heard that women talk in bathrooms. Is that true?
We do, yeah.
Are you serious? Because men don't do that. No. Do we, guys?
No.
In fact, if a man talks in the bathroom, other men will walk out. Really? Don't go in, there's a guy talking! Gentlemen, I want you right now to look at the male sitting next to you and ask him to like to go to the bathroom with you during the next break. I saw that right there. Look at this guy. You touched him on the arm. I just saw that. Yeah. Want to go? Let's go. Let's go. There are three things women hate most in dealing with a male producer, male life producer. Three things women can't stand. Now, I got to tell you, ladies, you got to give me some backup here because I have no idea what I'm talking about. So if you think it's yes, say yes out loud, okay? If you think it's no, just say no. But do it out loud so these guys know if I'm right or no, okay? Okay, here it comes. Number one, you men give women advice when they never ask for it in the first place. Come on, women, is that yes or no?
Yes.
Number two, you men interrupt women while they're talking. How about that one?
Yes.
Is number three the worst, though?
Yes.
Even though they look like it, men really don't listen. But Kim, I think I'm being too tough on the guys here. How many men think you're awfully darn good listeners? Would you raise your hand, please? Really good listeners. In that case, gentlemen, think of the last time you had a conversation with a woman. In the middle of the conversation, you heard a pause and thought, uh-oh, I've just been asked a question. That's who women are. This is how they buy. Number one, she wants to protect her kids. It's always about the kids. I bought life insurance about a year and a half ago, and the agent looked at me and said to my wife, who do you care most about? She said, my kids. And she looked at me, she said, yeah, my husband too. It's always the kids. Number two, it's always a protection against disaster. You know this gang. Women more risk-averse than males are. They love that cash value buildup within the policies. They love that kind of stuff because it's protected. And if you don't call that woman, or try to call at least every 3 to 6 months, she'll do a BBD on you. She'll go to a bigger, better deal with somebody else because it's all about, and you tell them, I'm going to talk to you, see you face-to-face or telephone every 3 months for the rest of your life. I hope you're okay with that. And she's going, thank God, finally I get this. Number two, they communicate connection first. Men communicate credibility first. You're in a man's office, he's in your office, you talk about the weather, you talk about sports. As soon as that man looks at his watch, he wants to get down to business on the spot. You know that, but you don't know that. Women will completely switch. She'll talk about her kids, her job, her last vacation. She'll talk about the weather. She'll talk about the backyard, front yard. She'll talk about the TV being on the blink. She'll go on and on and on. Does it mean she's empty-headed? Not a chance. Women think quicker than men do, remember things longer than men do. They're more articulate than men are, but they elucidate more effectively. It's my personal opinion, Roxanne, that women are smarter than men are. I really believe this. And how many of you men have learned from the get-go, you cannot win an argument with a woman? Have you got this yet, Boyd? Yeah, we now have analytical, physiological proof, Boyd, of why you can't win an argument with her. University of Minnesota has now discovered that men communicate for one area of the brain called Wernicke-Broca's area, left lateral hemisphere. If a man has a stroke in this area of the brain, he will not talk for the rest of his life, which is pretty much not a problem. Popcorn, football on TV, he's happy for a decade. Women communicate for four separate areas of the brain. Do you know about this, Kim? Four areas. Left lateral hemisphere, right frontal lobe, right lateral, rear occipital lobe. If you want to get a woman to stop talking, you have to cut off her head. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Is it Luann?
It is.
Who really talks more, males or females? What do you think?
Females.
Women do? You really don't. You do talk more one-on-one intimately, but when there's a group of people there, men dominate the conversation. You can't get a word in. Am I right about that, Luann? They won't let you talk. By the way, just in case you might have missed the last 20 minutes, this pretty much sums it up. I thought I got an hour. Don't get an hour. Well, God, you guys are shortchanging me here. Okay. Yeah, because of my good friend Bart, we have to cut the program. I know, isn't it terrible? Okay. Golfers, raise your hand, please, golfers. Okay. If you answer this right, I'm going to give you a free book called Why Smart People Make Dumb Mistakes Money. If you could tell me who the top money winner was in the year 1989. Top money winner, who was it? Wasn't Jack Nicklaus? Nope. Was it Billy Casper? Nope. Nope. Wasn't Al Palmer? What? Lynn, come over here, Lynn. How did you know that, Lynn? Gary Player? Come over here, Lynn. This is amazing. How did you know that?
I just guessed, actually.
Just guess.
Yeah.
Golf Channel?
Yeah, nope.
Golf Magazine?
Maybe.
Come on, you had to have known this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah? Golf Magazine?
Yeah. Maybe.
Gary Player, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. It was Tom Kite.
So, I'm keeping the book.
Wait a second. He's going to beat back down a couple. You could just sit down here. Yeah. But look at this. $1.4 million. Bought a guy, Craig Stadler. This is a $1 million difference. Look at that. Look at the right side. 0.7 strokes per 18 holes of golf that year. It was $1 million. Per 18 holes of golf, 0.7 strokes. Amazing, huh, Lynn?
Yeah, pretty amazing.
Okay. Now, one more time. This is your last chance to keep the book, okay? Last top money winner, 1999, but I'm going to give you lots of hints. This is going to be hard for you to miss this, I hope. Okay, here's the first hint. Had some marriage problems.
That limits
got,
it way down.
Got hit in the head by a 3-iron. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay, you got this one. Tiger, 6.6. Freddie Couples has got a great swing. He did 700,000 that year. This is a $6 million difference. Look at the right side this time. 0.3 strokes per 18 holes of golf that year was $6 million. 0.3 strokes in our business is called relationships, rapport, and trust. It's not about whole life UL term. It's about people. Two things I want you to start doing in your business from now on. Read for 15 minutes on a daily basis about the kind of stuff we've been talking about. And number two, to your driving time and your learning time by doing, guess what, in your car every single place you go. If you'd like to find out more about the things I've been talking about, you're going to find a couple of audio and videos out there in the hallway. But I hate to sell things. I love to do giveaways. Can I give away a couple of CDs? You mind if I just do this? Okay. Pass your business cards right to the aisle. And would you collect cards in that aisle over there, please? And would you in the red collect cards in the aisle? Let me tell you what your choice is. Got to do this quick because parts breathe down my neck. One is called How to Read Your Client's Mind, listening skills, persuasion techniques, how to understand what people are thinking, how to get inside their heads. All the stuff I couldn't talk about today came right from here. It's called trust-based selling, matching, mirroring, based on really advanced neuro-linguistic programming techniques. If you'd like to find out more about behavioral economics, why smart people really make dumb mistakes on the money, it might come from here. It's called behavioral investing. But, you know, if you were better on the telephone this last year, would you have made more money? Would you have? Yeah? Telephone is really critical, especially if you're going to book referrals, but I love this one. This might be one you want to pick. It's called Science of Self-Discipline. This sold 10,000 copies the first month it came out. Ever lost weight and gained it back before? Just out of curiosity? Yeah? And let's get honest right now. How many think the Slim Fast should come with nachos? Anybody here? Just. But you know, if I got one, I get this. It's called Peak Performance. We found out that people involved increased their business by 80% in 8 weeks. I hope you're skeptical. I would be. If your business does not increase by at least 80% in 8 weeks, send it back for a refund. Last time I spoke to Anefa, I got this thing back with a note that said, Carrie, I copied your CDs, now I want my money back. Yep. Okay. Thanks for doing that. Got over here? Okay. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate that. Okay. You look like a good-looking guy, Derek.
Yeah, good.
Like a lawyer or something. You are like legal counsel for Allegis?
I am.
Okay, I knew that. Okay, hold your hand up like this. This person is going to get a free book. The next person is going to get any CD program they want. Free book goes to. Go ahead, pick. Who's that?
Kevin.
Is that Kevin?
Yeah, Kevin Weinshart.
Kevin Weinshart?
Yeah.
Where, Kevin Weinshart, are you here, Kevin? Congratulations, Kevin. Give him a hand on that, please. Congratulations, Kevin. I'll sign it for you, too. Okay. He got the book. This person gets anything they want. Okay. Where'd you go to law school?
Cambridge, Joseph Adams.
Joseph Adams from Cambridge. Where are you here, Joseph? Stand up, Joseph. Congratulations, Joseph. Give him a hand, too. If you happen not to have won, you're going to find all those programs. Do you have that little newsletter they gave you during when they walked in, that little newsletter thing? Can you just grab me one of those? Oh, there it is. Thank you. If you happen not to have won, you're going to find all the stuff I just talked about right here. If you fill out this little coaching evaluation thing, we have our little coaching program, I will give you free this video on referral techniques and top producers. If you want any one of the CD video programs, just fill this thing out. 20% discount today only. Any two CDs, you get a free book. I'll be here until just after lunch. If you get anything, I'll just give you a free download, and I'll give you a copy to your telephone, iPad, and I'll give you a free copy of my new book coming out, too. And do me a favor. Touch the person on the arm next to you right now and say, that's a heck of a deal. Short story in closing. I happened to be raised by an older Irish grandfather. He used to tuck me in at night, say things like, until I wake you up, I hope the rain falls gently on your fields. I hope the Lord blows against your back. And until I wake you up, I hope the Lord holds you in the hollow of his hand. I love that guy. When I was 13 years old, my grandfather died in the same house I woke up in that morning. My grandmother came down the staircase. She said, Carrie, one of the last things your grandfather said is tell Carrie we're pulling for him. And Kevin, I'm going to write that in your book too. 2009, I spoke at Hawaii Text Institute, came back with flu type A. That Monday, I spoke to National Life of Vermont, came back with pneumonia. And someplace between New York and Los Angeles, I went into something called sepsis. I went to get my overhead bag, collapsed on the airplane, paralyzed, and I couldn't move. They took him by ambulance to St. Joseph Hospital, where I had triple organ failure. I was in a coma for 6 weeks, ICU for 3 months. And this doctor actually said to my wife that first night, he's going to die or live, we don't know which. I learned three things. Number one, I learned that prayer works. Number two, I learned that my wife and my daughters were stronger than I could have been. And number three, I learned the relationships you build are more important than the cash. And here's the kicker. The more you feel that way, the more money you make. Thanks for being here.